Well, what we see with most banks that fail, and this one really is not much different, is very aggressive lending tactics and a lot of times a lack of diversification. In other words, a lot of their loans are in one sector of the economy, such as commercial real estate. And that simply, obviously, if that goes bad, then all of your eggs are in one basket, so to speak.
So is this where they got into trouble, was too many real estate, commercial real estate loans?
In general, the best thing to say is that there was very aggressive lending in the commercial real estate area, and we're not allowed to go into too many details because of state confidentiality laws, but it is typical of what we see around the state when banks struggle and fail.
Now, the FDIC, and this, there are a lot of different figures here that are thrown around in the FDIC news release, not so many in the release from you folks, so maybe you can clear up some things for me from the FDIC. The FDIC says that Premier, as of June 30th, had about $1.2 billion in total assets and a little over $1 billion in total deposits. Now, that's $2.2 billion in assets and deposits. You must have had some really bad loans to throw things into this kind of situation.
No, the math doesn't quite work out that way. Deposits can also be deposits are considered both an asset and a liability because they are owed to the depositors, and so you can't really add the numbers together like that and get total assets.
Okay, so basically what we're saying
is really complicated, Bob.
Yeah, I understand. So they've got total assets of $1.18 million, but of that amount, $1.03 million actually belongs to somebody else, leaving them with a very thin margin. Would
correct.
That be a fair thing to say? Okay,
yes.
And then when you add in the bad loans, that more than exceeds the difference between their deposits and their assets.
That is true.
Okay. The FDIC says that Providence Bank has entered into a loss share transaction on $409 million of Premier Bank's assets. Can you tell me what that $409 million is?
Just a sec. Yeah. Essentially, what that means is that the FDIC's insurance fund will contribute about $400 million to the transaction. Obviously, when a bank is or any business is struggling like this and is upside down, it's not as attractive to a buyer. So the FDIC contribution makes that purchase doable for the buyer. And because of the FDIC's contribution and the state's action in closing the bank, it's important to note that consumers are actually much better off now. Depositors of that bank, for the first time in several years, are now part of a strong and healthy bank.
Well, your news release says that Providence Bank is a $170 million state bank, and yet it's buying $657 million in Premier assets. Are they having to borrow a bunch of money to take over this bank?
I can't get into details like that, the buying bank might be able to share that kind of information for you. But in general, banks can raise capital beyond what they currently have in assets. Their shareholders can contribute money, their board of directors can, or other ways when they want to go out and buy another bank.
But a bank with $170 million, $170 million bank that's going to spend roughly four times that much to buy Premier has to have some kind of assets beyond its $170 million.
Banks can get assets in a lot of different ways. They can either use their existing assets or they can have capital injected by raising money through shareholders or other investors. So, yes, there are ways that a bank can buy a larger bank by raising additional capital.
In a case like this, what does Providence Bank get out of this other than all of a sudden a whole bunch of new depositors?
It's hard to say. I mean, at the state level, what we're looking out for is the depositors to make sure that they're protected, and they are in this case and in any of these transactions because of the FDIC's backing and because they're now part of a strong and healthy institution for the first time in quite a while.
This, I understand, is the sixth bank this year that's been closed in Missouri that you folks have been involved in.
This is the seventh bank that the Missouri Division of Finance has closed since September of last year, so in the past year.
What is what's the track record now? Depositors, of course, even though you're assuring them that their money is safe, is there a track record that indicates folks do have a tendency to go to these banks and start pulling money out, even if there is a new sign on the board and everybody says, hey, things are fine?
I don't think so. In fact, there's been some media coverage of bank closures around the country, and a lot of times, understandably, depositors are nervous, and they'll come into the bank and talk about withdrawing some of their funds because the bank has been purchased. But there's FDIC staff on site for the few days after the closure, and a lot of times those depositors are reassured that they are now part of a much stronger institution than they were just a few days ago.
You mentioned earlier that one of the reasons that Premier has folded is because of a heavy number of loans that that became uncollectible. What happens under this takeover now to the people who took out those loans? Do they have any responsibility to pay things back, or what happens to them?
The loans are remain on the books in some cases with the buying bank, and in other cases the loans are simply written off as bad debt. And so that is worked out in the transaction before the buying bank comes in and finalizes the purchase.
Okay, and you can't tell me how much those bad loans are.
No.
Okay, that's part of the confidentiality thing?
Yes.
Okay.
Any of the details beyond what the FDIC contribution is and, the asset numbers of the banks are confidential. Anything that comes as a result of our bank exams is confidential.
The FDIC numbers say that they had assets of $1.18 billion as of the 30th of June, and your news release says by September 30th, the end of the next quarter, they were down to $989 million. My math says that's a $29 million loss in assets. Is that one of the indicators that this bank was sick and not going to get well?
Yes, I think so. We had been working with this bank, as we do with any troubled bank, for a number of years, and hoping that things would improve for the sake of the owners, because the depositors we know are going to be fine because of the insurance and because of a successful purchase like this one. But if we can, these are businesses that we would like to see succeed because they're owned by oftentimes Missourians, and we want them to have success with their businesses. And so we've worked with them for a long time, but in some cases things just don't get better, and in fact they continue to get worse. And once a bank reaches a certain level of solvency or reaches the level of insolvency, the state has the authority and the obligation to step in.
All right, this is your second bank that you guys took over today.
Yes.
Is it the same type of situation as they had with the Westbridge Bank in Chesterfield, same situation?
Yes. That was a smaller bank, but we saw a lot of the same problems that led to that closure. And oftentimes the banks that struggle the most and end up failing are have a lot in common. They're overly invested in one sector of the economy, such as commercial real estate or construction loans, and they simply don't have enough diversity to be able to withstand losses if that sector goes south.
I've been told that the investors in Premier Bank are going to be losing tens of millions of dollars. What happens to investors in a bank that fails?
Well, I think investors in any business, when the business fails, suffer those losses. And there are no guarantees when you invest in a business that you're going to make money or even break even. There are cases where we've seen a lot of disputes between investors after a business fails, and that's not uncommon, but that's not to say that's going to happen here. I think anyone who invests money takes the chance that they may not see that money again.
And one of the things I know that you want to emphasize, because it always is emphasized when we have something like this, is the money that people have deposited in the bank, at least up to FDIC limits, is safe and protected, and they're not going to lose any of those funds.
That's correct. And in fact, in this transaction, all of the deposits were acquired by the purchasing institution. So even if there were folks who had, or businesses who had accounts with more than $250,000 in them, all of those deposits would be acquired and would be unchanged with the new buying bank. And that's one thing that we do during our bank examination process, is find out seek out depositors that have more than the FDIC limit, so that we can make sure that those depositors are notified and can move their money into a new account or somehow redistribute their assets so that they're all covered by FDIC insurance.
Well, I have you. The FDIC insurance covers up to $250,000. Is that $250,000 in one account or a total of deposits in several accounts in a bank that I might
have?
That's
per account.
Per account. So
yes.
If I have six accounts, I can have $250,000 in each one of them.
That
and
is
be
generally
protected.
True. There are some rules about how many different accounts you have, but for example, if you're married, each spouse could have an account covered up to the full limit. You could have a joint account covered up to the full limit. You might have a CD or a savings account or another type that would be covered.
Okay.
There might be some cases where you wouldn't be covered on all of them, like if you opened up multiple checking accounts in the same person's name.
Yeah. As long as I can figure out a way to put a different person's name on it or
That's
work
right.
a combination, I'm covered up to $250,000 in each account.
That's right.
Okay, so no problem here. When a situation like this happens, the new bank comes in and there's a sign that goes up on the front of the bank immediately. So that means you have to have let this other bank know somewhat ahead of time that they were, in fact, going to be taking over. When did you tell Providence Bank, okay, you're going to get this bank, you better start making up signs and making plans?
Well, really, our job is to close the bank and then turn it over to the FDIC as the receiver, and the FDIC temporarily holds on to the bank, and I mean for a very, very short time, sometimes a matter of minutes, until the purchaser signs on the dotted line. But there are a lot of negotiations that go on, sometimes for several weeks, between the failing bank, the buying bank, and the FDIC as to which deposits are going to be acquired, which loans are going to be acquired, how much of the FDIC fund will be spent in order to make the transaction happen. So all the parties involved in this have known about this for some time.
What happens to the employees of the bank? I mean, the tellers, and not the officers, but certainly the tellers and other and loan officers or somebody like that. Are they out of jobs?
Well, oftentimes we see the buying bank keep the staff largely intact. That is completely up to the purchasing bank, however.
The next area, I guess, to explore is I have never heard of criminal charges resulting from something like this. I suppose there may be some egregious situations where there have been some, but do criminal charges very often come out of a bank failure?
I've not heard of that happening. There actually was one case, now that I think about it, in 2008, I believe, in Missouri, where a bank failed, and that was because of suspected fraud on behalf of the bank president. And so that bank didn't fail because of difficult economic times or risky lending. It was because of suspected fraud. And so that one did lead to criminal charges.
Travis, how many banks?
But that's an unusual case.
Yeah.
Most of what we're seeing around the country right now, and in the few instances in Missouri we've had, it's simply been a very difficult economy and oftentimes tied to either residential or commercial real estate.
I'm trying to remember. I haven't heard of a whole lot of banks or very many banks in Missouri that have gone under during this recession that we've had. Have we had seven since last September, but is that really a very big number?
That's more than we'd like to see, but it could certainly be worse. And we see fluctuating numbers all over the country. Some states have had a very high number of closures, and others have not seen very many at all. It just varies state by state. And we're glad it's not more than seven, but we'd like it to be zero.
Will your division of finance and the FDIC actually have any people in the banks tomorrow, or will there just be bank staff folks there to explain everything?
I believe there will be FDIC staff on hand tomorrow for those banks that have Saturday hours.
Yeah, okay. Well, is this the biggest bank failure we've had among those seven?
Yes, it is. Yeah, in fact, the next biggest was Champion Bank in St. Louis, which was $187 million in assets.
So
this is quite a bit bigger.
Yeah, this is we're talking billion.
Yeah, almost
roughly.
A billion.